This week on Out of the Air features playwright, actor, solo performer Randy Nugent, one-man show Man of the Decade, an evening with John Lennon at Lark and Selle, July 21st through 23rd. Next, we feature LaPorte County Symphony's new executive director, Emily Yaninas. Our spotlight's on South Bend's Art 4 Theater's production of the musical Spring Awakening, running July 28th through August 6th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, and WDSO 88.3 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight. They've been with us before from the Art 4 Theater, and they're going to talk about their production opening on July 28th, Spring Awakening. And it's going to be the co-directors for Spring Awakening, Malk Alban and Ashley Koya. Welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Hello. Hello. Thanks for having us.
Well, we just want to kind of go over what it is. First of all, since we've never had Ashley on before, briefly just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, even though it's not a feature interview, and then we'll talk about working together on Spring Awakening.
Absolutely. So I grew up in the Philly area, and I moved to New York for college. I went to NYU, and I studied musical theater at Tisch, and graduated and worked there. Then COVID hit. And I decided it was time for a big change, and my partner and I moved to South Bend, where 2 weeks in, I auditioned for a show and met Mark, and we worked together on that show with me as an actor and Mark as my director. And as I started to, you know, grow my artistic, my artistic toolbox, I decided that I wanted to enter into directing, and Mark has been really generous in creating space for me to, like, really explore my artistry. So we decided to work together on, or Mark asked me to work with him on Spring Awakening, which has been
What
really
was the first
fun.
Show?
It was Fun Home. Yep, it was a great
And then we just did Godspell in the Spring, which was also at the St. Joseph County Public Library. And Ashley just brings this energy and clarity into the room about just seeing people and the story and where we want to take audiences. And you're going to see it in the staging for Spring Awakening. It's so clear and deliberate. You're going to get everything that you need out of it.
Well, and Godspell is such an interesting show that it can be presented in so many different ways, and it's kind of fun that way. Well, Mark, just a quick thumbnail. I can refer people back to your previous interviews about you, and then let's talk about the upcoming production.
Yeah, originally from Chicago, my husband and I moved to the South Bend area in 2015, and in 2017, we decided to start Art 4 because we really felt like it fit this niche that wasn't met yet, somewhere in between community theater, where everybody's volunteering their time, and then Broadway tourists that come through the Morris in South Bend. So we're bridging that gap to be a catalyst of people's careers to take them from community theater and launch them into a professional environment.
Very good. So
that's a sweet spot.
It is.
It's oh, great. Yeah.
And, you know, and South Bend is positioned probably right there in the upper center of Indiana to be, you know, drawing people. And yet you're not really competing with a big city like Chicago or something like in Northwest Indiana. We are. So Spring Awakening, tell us a little bit about the origin of the story and some of the music in it, because it is a musical.
So Spring Awakening is based on a play by Frank Wedekind, which is also called Spring Awakening. And it essentially takes us through the story of these adolescents experiencing their journey in growing up and how
tempestuous times.
Yes, definitely. It's great to be doing it now because it really explores the differences in like the generation gap between the adults and the adolescents and how their breakdowns in communication really lead to a lot of tumultuous experiences for the adolescents and the youth. And the music is by Duncan Sheik and Steven Sater. It's beautiful. It's very, indie rock, which is so appropriate for adolescent angst. And Duncan Sheik actually talks about how it was written to be a little bit Brechtian in the sense that it exposes the wires and they like whip out, you know, handheld mics that are very modernized. And in this 1891 German atmosphere, everything pauses so that you can have this emotional experience of the song rather than it flowing naturally in as it does in most shows. You know, like I just naturally go and bridge into song after I have this monologue. But with this show, it really breaks and it exposes the wires and shows that these are just the deeper emotions of the character.
Yeah, and it's met with this juxtaposition between this older novella and this contemporary sound. And it's really edgy material. When people think of Spring Awakening, in addition to thinking 8-time Tony Award-winning musical, they also think edgy and pushy topics that are sensitive to talk about. And what's interesting about that is that, you know, these are topics like sexuality, they're topics about teen suicide, they're topics about like sensory culture and the way that we communicate with one another. And yet the source material is written in the 1800s and it's talking about this, right? So we think of it as edgy because it's current, but it's something that we've been talking about and in Germany, right? So it's not just universal across time periods, but it's universal across cultures too. And it's really kind of beautiful in that way.
Up is fraught with so many things, probably from the beginning of time.
How long have you been in rehearsal?
We started rehearsal early June, and oh my gosh, the cast is killing it. They pick things up so quickly. I'm like, it'll take 2 hours to do this, and then 20 minutes, and they've got it. And it's mesmerizing. It's really cool.
Is the cast from around the country or pretty much local?
They're basically local within the region, but super duper talented. And we're going to be opening July 28th, performing through August 6th. For ticket information, go to art4sb.org. Right on our homepage, you can find a link that takes you to Spring Awakening. And it's at the St. Joseph County Public Library, right in the heart of downtown South Bend. Tickets are online. Get them now. The only thing that's missing from this equation is you in the seats. So join us.
We would encourage you coming out. Real quick, what's your next show?
After Spring Awakening, we're doing Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, and that's in November. I know we'll have to talk about that closer in the fall. I look forward to it.
Sounds great. Well, thanks so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight. That's Mark Alban and Ashley Cuella. They're doing Spring Awakening at Art 4 Theater in South Bend. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A Spotlight Extra. Mark Guarino will be doing a book signing of his new book, Country and Midwestern, The Untold Story of Chicago's Pivotal Role as a Country and Folk Music Capital at Hammond's Paul Henry's Gallery on Saturday, July 22nd. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM, and WDSO, 88.3 FM.
We would like to welcome Randy Nugent and Angie Lowe to Art on the Air. Randy is an actor, playwright, director, author, and musician. He has acted in hundreds of plays, plus both film and television. His plays have been widely produced nationally and internationally. Randy is based in New York, but brings his solo show, Man of the Decade, An Evening with John Lennon, to his hometown. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome.
Hi, Esther.
Welcome, Randy. And we also have Angie Lowe on, director. This is going to be a fundraising event, and we'll chat with her a little bit later. But first off, Randy, we want to know all about you, your origin story. I like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Randy.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be here, and Esther. I was born in Hammond. My parents are from Alabama. They migrated north for the steel industry. My dad was in the steel industry. My mom became a beautician, and we lived in Schererville. I was born in Hammond, and then we eventually ended up in Schererville, where I luckily got to go to high school with Angie Lowe and Paul Lowe as my first theater teachers, a rare husband and wife director team. So I grew up in the region. I went to Pfeiffer Elementary School and Kaler Junior High, and then Lake Central. We did musicals in the spring and straight plays, straight comedies in the fall, and then in the summer, graduates would come back and we would do bigger plays, a little bit more professional and with older people, actually the age they were supposed to be in the play. So that's how I started. That's how I became a theater lover and a music lover. Of course, Michael T. Lewis was my teacher at Lake Central. And so, you know, that's where I was filled with the interest and my life direction from those people, those teachers. And so it's really great to be able to come back and pitch in and, you know, give back a little bit and help them raise some money to do more theater. They've kept the tradition going. They wouldn't know what to do if they weren't producing plays.
So, Randy, it sounds like you were pretty solid on what you wanted to do. Not that this would just be part of your life, but this was an early like focus and direction.
Yeah, it was obvious to me that if you wanted to try the thing that brought you the most joy first. I mean, there's always time to settle for something else, plan B. But luckily, my parents were sweet enough to allow me to be a theater major at Indiana State University, where the Lowes went. I kind of followed their example by even going to Indiana State University, where there also happens to be some fantastic teachers and playwrights and directors. And so I feel really happy about my education in Indiana. And so at Indiana State, they let me write plays and be the leads in plays. And so, you know, I delusionally thought I'll just go to New York. It's been a little bit different here. The pond is much bigger here, but I still see the greatest things here. And I do some work here, but I tend to work out of town a lot. But not to get too far ahead, I continued my education after Indiana State, graduating there as a theater major. I met Marshall Mason there. He was Lanford Wilson's director. The great playwright Lanford Wilson, who wrote Fifth of July and Tally's Folly and Burn This. And Marshall, I happen to know, be boyhood friends with Gene England, who was at Indiana State also. He was basically visiting his friend, but he did an acting workshop with us. And he invited me to be an intern at Circle Rep, an off-Broadway theater in New York. I was 25. So that got me to New York to inherit a new family. They're still my family, the Circle Rep family, even though that theater has gone under now. In 94, they stopped producing plays, but still Marshall is around. He's in his 80s and he's still my mentor and good friend. And so I grew up in New York. I had another family like the Lowe's and like Indiana State was to me. You find a tribe. You keep finding different tribes in different locations. I have a tribe in North Carolina, too, because I often work in Asheville at Southern Appalachian Repertory Theater. It's a place that, you know, I'm filled with gratitude just talking about all this, meeting some of these people where you get to do work over and over again. I've done probably 100 plays at Southern Appalachian Repertory Theater in their summer. They do a summer theater thing there. And for over 30 years, I've been doing a couple plays a year with them. And along the way, I began to write. I even got MFAs while I was in New York. I got there was an opportunity to get an MFA. Actually, Marshall Mason, my mentor, was teaching at Arizona State University after he had left New York. And I got to study with him there even more focusedly. He wasn't a teacher, really, at Circle Rep. He was the artistic director. But here I got to really study Meisner and Stanislavski with him and collaboration. Circle Rep does things a little bit differently. The playwright and the actors and the directors, it's a collaboration. It's the lines of creativity are a little bit more blurry when you work on a Lanford Wilson play. The actors are encouraged to bring their thoughts and creative ideas. So I did study again. I got an MFA in acting from Arizona State, where I studied with Marshall. And right after that, for some reason, I went to the University of Iowa to get another master's. You're really not supposed to get two of those. But I wanted to focus deeply on playwriting. And so I spent another 3 years at the University of Iowa in their playwriting program, studied there. So I've been writing. And since then, I've written some plays. I just finished. I wrote a Hank Williams play that was just produced. It's about Hank and his wife. It's called Mrs. Hank, a three-character play. But I started writing these solo pieces because I could be in charge of it. I wanted to write for myself, and I wanted to pick musical heroes. I had no vision of writing three of them, but I first wrote a Woody Guthrie piece because his words were so... I've done some Steinbeck. I've done some Of Mice and Men a couple of times. And it's fun to say Steinbeck. And if you read Woody's novels, it really, Bound for Glory is basically a novel. He writes in a vernacular that's fun to say. So I ended up creating a piece, a monologue with music of Woody Guthrie. Over the last 10 years, actually, I've done these solo pieces where I've taken them, you know, to many fringe festivals all over the country, even Edinburgh. I took Woody Guthrie to the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland. And so John Lennon is my newest piece. I've done a Woody Guthrie that I toured for 3 or 4 years. Then I created a Pete Seeger, same thing, a monologue with music telling his basic story, introducing him to people who don't know him. And it's very theatrical. These musicians are sing-along musicians, at least Woody and Pete. It was a participatory thing. I thought it lended itself to live performance.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Yeah, because you want to sing along with those things and get that vibration in the room. So my latest piece that only premiered last summer, and my shows do tend to develop over time. They're not really...
It's not static. It seems like you would have to go by the mood almost.
Yes. Yes. And over time, audience after audience tells you what you can do. You can sense when they're with you and when they're not. So,
and also you really educate yourself on the person. And so as you learn things or interpret things differently, so the show would then adapt, I would imagine.
Very true. Yeah. Yeah. John Lennon, because of the pandemic, it premiered a year later than it was scheduled to premiere. So that gave me more time, and I really needed that year. Thank God for COVID. Only kidding. But it did give me another year to study John, who was very complex. And 1 year, I don't know, I guess I'm just slow, but I to create even a 45-minute piece about a person, I need 4 biographies and every song they've ever written and every, you know, interview they ever did in order to really conceive, to even start, really. So the research on all these guys is ongoing, and they were all very prolific, and there's 1,000 things written about Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger and John Lennon. they all do sort of have a... Woody was political. I lean to the left, and I chose Woody because he was, because it was created around the time of Occupy Wall Street was when I was creating that. And it was Bernie Sanders was in my head at that time. And Pete follows right after that. Pete and Woody had the same politics. And John's different, but John was a peacenik. And, you know, most people will call John an activist. I guess he did. It was really Yoko who drew him that direction, I think. He wasn't much of an activist as a Beatle, but when he met Yoko, the New York artist, avant-garde downtown artist, she had a lot of influence on John. And when he did move to New York, he spent a year, he made an album, a very unsuccessful album, that was full of protest songs. And he tried to go in that direction and, you know, with varying success, but he wasn't apolitical. Maybe, you know, he's less known for that than Woody and Pete Seeger.
It's a different sort of subtle input that he has with his music. I mean, the lyrics and and the melodies are so lovely that, you know, you really have to listen to it to really get the under message that he's trying to. It's not like, you know, it's not right there, but it's layered.
It's funny that Pete Seeger actually put him on the map as an activist. Pete Seeger sang "Give Peace a Chance" at the Washington Monument, at the Moratorium for the War or something. Some big, you know, a half a million people sang with Pete. Pete led them singing "Give Peace a Chance," and not that whole song that has a lot of almost rap lyrics to it, but just the chorus. All we are saying is give peace a chance, over and over again. And John kind of became famous and thought of as an activist because Pete used his song the way Pete uses songs, bring people together.
You know, Randy, I was going to ask you about the show itself a little bit, and we're going to listen to an excerpt in just a moment here. But tell us about, do we see an evolution, or are you taking just a period of John Lennon in the show? Or do we see, like sometimes these Beatlemania things, they take the evolution of the Beatles. How do you present your show?
It was commissioned by Oklahoma Chautauqua. They do every year. They hire scholar performers to create pieces. So I was part of a group of four. We had an Allen Ginsberg, a John Lennon, a Mama Cass, and and Timothy Leary. We had five, actually, and a Charles Isherwood. And the theme was the 60s. Sex, drugs, rock and roll was the actual thing. So I felt obliged to cover John in that theme because that was their theme. And I was happy to, you know, I think any boundary is helpful because it's not just, it can be anything. It had to be, I had to hit that target on some level. So I ended up only covering John, not in a trajectory, not trying to cover his whole life. I put him at an actual event, which was called Man of the Decade. He was chosen by Desmond Morris, who wrote The Naked Ape. In 1969, he was chosen Man of the Decade. It became a TV documentary, but I thought, let's say he had to give an acceptance speech for Man of the Decade. Let's just say he did. And so I contextualize everything. I decided I'm going to put everything in one acceptance speech about being Man of the Decade, which implies that I should cover the decade at least. And the Beatles were really only 10 years. The Beatles were a decade group. And so was his marriage. And so I covered his marriage. To get the sex in, I decided that they've asked him to not talk about his private life and illegal drugs. And so he reads that letter to the audience saying, they've asked me not to talk about this. And so therefore, John being the rebel that he is, he talks only about that. So I have him covering. He's just married Yoko in 1969. The public hates him and hates Yoko, and they're prejudiced. You know, John considers it a racist, anti-woman thing, but the public has kind of turned against him and thinks that he shouldn't have left his wife. And so he basically, as an actor, I've learned that we need an action. We need a motivation, something we're trying to accomplish. I have John defending Yoko by telling the audience how his marriage was really one of duty. He got her, you know, she got pregnant just before, you know, the Beatles, just before they started recording. So he had to marry her in his mind and was unhappy the whole time and cheated on her the whole time, but just could never break her heart. And Yoko finally gives him real love. True love is motivates him to finally get out of his marriage. So that's how I'm covering him. And with the added caveat that all his best songs came out of his marriage, he claims. So I do 12 songs that are tied to times in his relationship with his wife and Yoko and the eventual divorce.
You know, this is a good time to take a listen to the clip that you sent us. So from Man of the Decade, An Evening with John Lennon, Randy Nugent. Let's take a listen here.
Look, I can't talk truthfully about me music without talking about me private life, which might include illegal drugs. Me songs are like diaries. Even if I do make them all gobbledygook to protect the guilty, it's unwise to tell me what not to do. So let's keep this simple and just stick to the brutal truth. Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. Had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short head, yellow belly, son of Tricky Dicky's gun, a mother hubbard, soft soap, me with just a pocket full of hope. Money for dope, money for rope. Had enough watching scenes with schizophrenic, egocentric, paranoiac prima donnas. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. Let's stick to the truth.
And we're back from that. That's Randy Nugent, our guest today on Art in the Air. An Evening with John Lennon, Man of the Decade. So that's great. I'm going to boot it over here to Angie for just a moment here. You know, we're down to our last, like, 4 minutes. Quickly tell us a little about the theater at Great Oaks. When you left Lake Central Theater Guild, you established that, and about bringing Randy there.
Wow, we've been so blessed to have Randy there. This will be the third time. And we left at Christmas of 04, Lake Central, after we had retired, Paul in 2000 and I in 2001. We had been asked to stay on. We stayed on for those 4 and 3 years, respectively, and it just got a little politically bad. So we decided, okay, we've done it. And we did it for our superintendent then, who said, please don't leave until I leave. And so then we did our first show in January of 2005 at Great Oaks, and we had changed our name. We kept the moniker LCTG that was once Lake Central Theater Guild, and we, because I taught French for 40 years, and I have to cheat a little bit on the actual capitalization for the LCTG. We called ourselves L'Arc-en-Ciel Theater Group. L'Arc-en-Ciel is the French word for rainbow. Who knew in 04 that the rainbow would become a significant emblem for the left and for all of our as liberals, we certainly have nothing but respect for every person, and that's the way we work. So we started there and did our first show on borrowed time, and I can't go through a litany of shows, but in 2012 we went to SART. In North Carolina there to see Randy. That's where we first saw his Woody Guthrie. And, oh, my God, he said, "Ange, I think you guys would like this show. Come on out." We saw him do Blythe Spirit first, and then they allowed him to do his Woody there. So we saw his Woody Guthrie there, and then somewhere between 12 and 2018, we went to the New York City Theater Fringe and saw his Pete Seeger, and then said, "Hey, want to bring those out?" And after he had brought 2012 out, we brought him out. In fact, we got the pleasure of taking Randy down to Charleston, South Carolina to see his good old buddy, one of our grads, Eddie Meyer. The two of them were a dynamic duo in our lives for those 5-6 years together. And then in 2018, he brought both shows, as I mentioned to you earlier, two nights of Woody Guthrie, two nights of Pete Seeger. And now here 5 years later, and definitely after COVID, I'm glad he had that time to work. He is bringing his Man of the Decade, which we traveled all the way to Tulsa, Oklahoma last June to see him do it as part of the Chautauqua. And that was a kick in the butt for Paul because as a speech teacher, he had taught about Chautauqua and it was actually our first one to ever attend. So that was really a blast. And so that's how it happened. Randy said, I think he saw that we were idle this summer a little bit because Paul had some surgery and he's doing fine, but we had to take a break. And I think he offered that up too as a fundraiser, but as a filler, something that we could be doing that would take almost no effort on our part. So he is our hero.
We only have about 30 seconds left, so we want to give you a chance to say when the show is, dates, times, and availability of tickets and how to find out.
Yes, well, thanks, Randy, for everything. And I loved hearing everything you said that showed me how you put the show together. We have Randy for one weekend only, Friday and Saturday nights, July 21 and 22. And Sunday, July 23, that's a matinee. We do Eats. It's a dinner theater. It's kind of evolved a little from dinner, total dinner theater, because no one wants to eat that much food in the heat and expenses being what they are. We've dwindled down a little from the 3-entree dinner served family style to a 2-entree buffet. And this one's going to be neither of those. This one's going to be hors d'oeuvres and charcuterie tables. Had to get a little French in there, and it's finger food, but it's, as a fundraiser, it's so much per person. We have to pay the venue anyway. That's all we ever pay the venue. We don't pay rent. And that started by Tom McAdams, and a new owner now is carrying it on.
That's Angie Lowe, and that's Great Oaks. And, of course, we've had an evening with John Lennon. Randy Nugent's show will be July 21st through the 23rd. You can find information online. Thank you so much for coming on Art on
the
Air.
Thank you.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much, Randy. Loved hearing your story.
Thank you. Love you, Angie.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Kenny White, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Emily Yiannonis to Art on the Air. Emily is an accomplished soprano with an active career as a soloist and chamber musician. She is also the newly appointed executive director of the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. Hello.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, Emily, we're glad to have you on board and, be the successor to His Majesty Tim King at this point. big shoes to fill, but I'm sure you have a resume that's very impressive. But what we first want to talk about is your origin story, where you grew up, family, everything like that. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about Emily.
Sure. Yeah. So I was born in Indianapolis, but raised in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And it was a wonderful place to grow up. I have a younger sister and a younger brother. Our whole family is pretty musical. We grew up singing in our church choir and in school musicals and that kind of thing. And then in high school, I got a little more serious about performing and did some community theater in Fort Wayne. Fort Wayne has a very lively and active community theater scene. And so that was a really great start to
arts in general. Fort Wayne is very vibrant.
It's surprising. A lot of people don't realize it, but there are lots of really talented people there doing
stuff. And the museum is just top notch.
Yes. In high school, I started studying voice more seriously and then decided to pursue it as a career and went on to study voice at DePauw University in Greencastle, Indiana, where I graduated with my Bachelor of Music degree. And then I went on to do a master's degree at Northwestern, also in voice performance. So spent many years training, and then spent about 5-6 years in Chicago pursuing a career as a classical soprano and sang for many different organizations. One of my first jobs was with a group called Opera for the Young. It's a fantastic organization out of Madison, Wisconsin, that takes operas and pares them down to about an hour in length and puts them in, translates them to English, of course, and takes it on the road into elementary schools all over Minnesota, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. Illinois. And the kids just love it. And it's such a fantastic way to introduce kids to opera. So I toured with them as Pamina and the Magic Flute for several weeks and just on the road, you know, living that lifestyle of musician on the road. And then did a lot of choral work in Chicago. I've been singing with Music of the Baroque since 2007. I love that organization. Jane Glover, the conductor, is just fantastic to work with. And also have sung with the Grant Park Music Festival in Millennium Park for many years. I'm taking the summer off since I'm starting this new job, but hopefully I'll be back there at least for one program next year. And then began my teaching career as well. In 2013, I began as an adjunct voice professor at Valparaiso University, and I continued to do that for 9 years. Loved the students there, just loved working with the students, and just the whole musical community there was just fantastic. Then the pandemic happened, and as so many of us did, I kind of took a look at what my future career would look like and what I wanted to do going forward, and I decided I wanted to make some changes. So I enrolled in the graduate program at the Lilly Family School of Philanthropy at Indiana University Online and completed that in about a year and a half. It was great. Can't say enough good things about their program. And just really started honing my skills in fundraising and nonprofit management. Then began to work for Opportunity Enterprises, where I was for about a year and a half, and got that hands-on experience just fundraising for a great mission. So that's what kind of brought me to the nonprofit development and fundraising world. And when I saw this position come up earlier this year, I just thought, what a great fit for my two kind of unique career paths of music and fundraising. So, and it's only 20 minutes away from home, you know, which you can't beat that. I thought, you know, maybe I would start looking in Chicago a little bit, but it's, I didn't want to go that far, and I didn't have to, because we have this wonderful, wonderful orchestra right here in Northwest Indiana.
You know, I want to dial back a little bit to some of your earlier, musicals in high school and
community.
So tell us some of the roles you were did.
Oh boy. Okay. So our high school theater director had very eclectic taste. So my first leading role was in a musical called Zombie Prom.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Are you familiar with it? And I played Delilah Strict, the teacher, the villain. So that was really fun. It was a big challenge too, because it was definitely outside my comfort zone of acting. And you know, I'd always been really strong singer, and the acting kind of didn't come as naturally. So I had to really work at that. And then my other leading role in high school was as Violet Hilton in Sideshow, one of the Siamese twins. And the other twin, she was much shorter than me. So I had to wear flats and she had to wear high heels so that we could somewhat be the same height, because I'm pretty tall. I'm about 5'8". So those were my two big leading roles in high school.
And community theater? Did you have any major?
Community theater, yes, I did. I played, I did a couple of chorus girl roles, and then I did play Babe Williams in Pajama Game.
Okay.
And that was really fun. That was really great. So
not a show you often see anymore. So it's kind of.
No, yeah, it was really fun. I liked it. They had to transpose a few things up for me because it was so low. It was like very low and belty. And, you know, I'm a higher voice type, so I remember they took some things up a little so that it wasn't so low for me.
Yeah, very Fosse-esque show.
Yeah. And we had some great dancers in that show too, some really good local talent. So it was cool.
Very good. Well, you're coming on to the LaPorte County Symphony. This is, what, 51st season and everything. So you're getting the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, from the former king and everything. But
yes.
So tell us about some of the things I know you're learning the job, but like some of the plans you have for the organization. I know you're kind of taking over the existing momentum, but you know, tell us a little bit about that whole vision you're bringing to the LaPorte County Symphony.
Sure, what was the first thing you dreamed about when you got the job? It's like, did you have that like, oh, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, I think one of the things I was most excited about was the education initiatives and getting that next generation involved in loving classical music and realizing it's not boring. As I said before, when I did that tour of Magic Flute, it was amazing to see the kids' faces just light up when you started singing, when you opened your mouth. They had no idea. Most people haven't heard those types of sounds, you know, the sound of an orchestra, the sound of a classical singer. And so they get really excited. And if you can reach them at that young age, I feel like, you know, you'll have a lifelong music lover. And it's just so good for their brains and for just their, you know, education, well-rounded education. So I'm really excited to work with our new education manager, Jared Coller, who came on this month, a newly created position here. He's full-time and he is working on our education initiatives. And so I'm excited to work with him and develop that. We really want to start a concerto competition. So local young people, young musicians audition to play their concerto or solo with the symphony. So this is something that lots of orchestras do, and we would like to begin one here at LCSO.
Well, that's great. And so you're doing not only the fundraising part, which is the businessy part, but then to get the artistic part. And I'm sure you've met Carolyn Watson and everything. So you're going to be interacting with her. So and she's relatively new to the symphony.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Carolyn and I had a great chat during my interview process. And we're on the same page with a lot of things. I love her programming. I love what she's programmed for this season. I think it's a good mix of the popular and then the lesser known works and lesser known composers as well. So I think she and I are going to have a lot of fun working together for sure.
So balancing your administrative duties there with some of your personal, it sounds like after you get settled, you still want to do some of the performance things that you're doing. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I still continue to sing with Music of the Baroque. I just signed my contract for this coming season. I'm not going to do as many programs as I usually do, but I am going to sing. So it's a chamber ensemble of 26 singers and a full orchestra, and doing mostly the great masterworks of Bach and Handel. So I'm going to do the Mozart Requiem in September, which is just one of my most favorite pieces of all time. I think this will be my third or fourth time performing it, but each time is just different and thrilling. And then I believe it's St. John Passion is the other one that I'm doing in the spring. So I'll still sing for sure. And you never know when another gig might pop up. But that's what's on my calendar currently.
Well, any opportunity for maybe to switch hats at the LaPorte County Symphony and maybe perform there at some point?
I think so. I know Tim has done that. Yeah. So I would love to continue that tradition. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go back to your experience. You were at Opportunity Enterprises for a little bit. Tell us, our audience, a little bit about that. I'm familiar with it, but tell us about that and the fundraising do. And, you know, that's such a wonderful organization and everything. So,
yeah, I would love to talk about them. So I felt really called to serve the mission because I had an uncle who had a disability. So Opportunity Enterprises serves people with disabilities of varying degrees in many ways through many different programs and services. So they have group homes, they have day programs, they have job placement services, just all kinds of wonderful social services. And I loved the team there. They were fantastic. My mentor, Allison Martin, I just love her. And she was just so supportive of me and giving me every opportunity to get out there and, you know, hone my skills in fundraising. And I got to organize a lot of big events, a gala, which had 700 attendees this last April at the Blue Chip Casino, a golf outing, a couple of breakfast events. So I got to do a lot of different things there. But they have a lot of awesome stuff on the horizon. The new respite center, Lakeside Respite Center on Lake Eliza, is going to open very soon. And the treehouse, which you said that you got a chance to tour, all accessible treehouse, wheelchairs, you know, anyone can go in it. So it's going to give lots of people the opportunity to go in a tree who may not otherwise. So I loved my work there. I really do. And I continue to support them. And I hope to maybe have a little time to volunteer. Probably not a lot of time, but
yeah, the treehouse smells of that cedar. It's just wonderful. You go in there and you feel like you're inside of a cedar chest. So,
oh my gosh.
And yeah, Allison Martin, I should tell you, is a former student of mine from Highland many, many years ago.
Really?
Yeah. So
she's the best.
Yeah. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM, and WDSO, 88.3 FM.
Have your children gravitated toward music?
A little bit. My daughter is 12. I always like to tell people the story of when I sang a performance of Handel's Messiah when I was pregnant with her, and I was right by the trumpets, and every time they would play, she would just kick me furiously. And so I feel like they heard so many performances and so much teaching while they were, you know, in the womb that I think it's definitely innate in them a little bit. My daughter plays cello in the school orchestra at Thomas Jefferson Middle School, where she goes. And my son, he's expressed some interest in piano. We have a piano at home, of course, and they'll sit there and just kind of, you know, doodle around on the piano. And my daughter took piano for a little while and then lost interest and then started cello. So I think they definitely have some musicality in their bones, and we'll see where they decide to take that.
So tell us a little bit more about your family and you know, how many kids you have and you know, things like that. We just love to hear about your background.
Oh, sure. Yeah. My husband and I have been married for 14 years this August. He is Greek, hence my Greek last name. I have just really embraced the Greek culture. I love it. I converted to Greek Orthodox. I like to tell my kids that someday I'm going to be like an old Greek yaya and cooking in the kitchen. And I love all the Greek recipes. And we actually just returned from a trip there. We were there for 2 weeks in early June. And it's just a wonderful country and wonderful culture. And then I have a 12-year-old daughter. Her name's Angela, and she loves to dance. She dances at a wonderful studio in Chesterton, and she ran track and cross country this year, tried something new. And then my son is 9. His name's George. He is going into fourth grade. He loves soccer, all things soccer. So that's all he wanted for his birthday this year was soccer jerseys. So, we have two little dogs too. We have two Shih Tzus, Sophia and Charlie. Sophia is Charlie's mother. So they're a mother and son duo, and we just love them to pieces. I didn't think we'd become a dog family, but then we got that pandemic urge to get a pet, and now we have two, and they kind of rule the household.
Yeah, but very cute personalities.
They do, yeah. And they're just so friendly to everyone and so cute.
So performance-wise, you're now concentrating more on the administrative, but is there something that you have wanted to perform, operatic or otherwise, that you haven't done, but you have that in your sights?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I've always wanted to play Maria in Sound of Music. I've thought about, like, I said to myself, maybe someday when I have time, I would do community theater or something just for the fun of it. And that would be the musical theater role I would choose. I think I might be getting a little too old to play her, but, you know, I could probably swing it for another 5 years or so, maybe.
Maria was actually fairly old when that happened. And the story of Sound of Music isn't exact. You know, the That's musical true. Version is quite different from the reality of it. So
that's true. You're right. You're right. But yeah, that's I just love that musical so much. That would be a real dream. I really love performing art song. I gave several faculty recitals at VU and explored. One of them was themed women. It was all women composers. And so I did some Clara Schumann and then this wonderful set by American composer Libby Larson called Try Me Good King, which is each song in the larger work is the last words of the wives of Henry VIII.
Oh.
And so it's very dramatic and very cool. And so I love art song. It's lesser known by, you know, it's not as grand as opera, but it's really intimate and special. And the collaboration between pianist and singer is something that's really fun to explore.
Very good. So embarking on this career, you know, it's taking you away from a little bit of performance, but everything. But what does your typical day look like? You may not even have that synthesized yet, but maybe Tim has given you a hint. But what does a day in the life of an executive director for LaPorte County Symphony look like?
Yeah, I think it really varies. So far, I told Tim, will you stay on just to drive me around town? Because he's been chauffeuring me around, which I love. But sadly, I think he would like to retire and enjoy his retirement, not drive me around. But we have been, he's been introducing me to a lot of our main supporters and donors, which is fantastic. I'm really loving getting to know them. I think it's a combination. It's some creative and some, you know, sitting and doing the QuickBooks and the balancing the accounts and making sure that everything is running smoothly administratively. And then there's some opportunity for creativity with, with communications, with marketing. I'm hoping to ramp up our Instagram presence and our Facebook presence and get those going. I found that there's a lot of people, especially in Porter County, that aren't even aware that our orchestra exists. And so I really want to employ social media to get the word out about LCSO. So I think every day is going to be a little different, especially as we approach all of the concerts and the programs. We have the Friendship Gardens concert coming up on July 16th in the evening. It's free and open to the public, 7:30 p.m. At Friendship Botanic Gardens in Michigan City. And so we're really, a lot of what we're doing right now is getting ready for that concert.
And do you have to oversee kind of the logistics of the setup of everything for each concert? I'm sure you have staff that does some of that stuff or volunteers, but.
Yeah, a little bit. So there is an operations manager who handles a lot of that. His name's Danny Lopez. But I handle like renting the truck, you know, for to haul all the equipment and anything that, you know, requires payment. I have to handle that. So, but actual hauling of instruments, I don't think I'll have to do that.
Oh, I didn't quite mean that, but yeah, but it is the nuts and bolts of how a symphony has to.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's not glamorous. You know, when I was working for Opera for the Young, we had to put up our own set. So we traveled in a 15 passenger van and there were five of us and we would get there and put up the set and then do the show and then take down the set and go to the next. So
yeah, they call those bus and truck tours. So yeah,
that's right. That's right. So I'm okay if I have to get my hands dirty a little bit.
And are you still going to have the instrument petting zoo for some of the concerts?
Yes. Yes. So that's on deck for our first subscription concert in November. So that'll be really exciting. And we have a very cool, I don't even remember how to pronounce it. It's a Hungarian instrument that most people have probably never even seen before. I think it's something like a concertina. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's a very interesting instrument. And so I think people will really get a kick out of seeing that, especially.
What about the intimate gatherings for fundraising? Is that still like the house concerts and...
Uh-huh.
Fundraising.
Yeah,
small
yeah.
Groups.
Tim is still primarily going to handle those because those are kind of his baby. But they just had one at a lavender farm here in LaPorte, which I'm now dying to go to because it just sounds so lovely. And they said it was fabulous. The jazz trio played and people really enjoyed the setting at the Lavender Farm. So yeah, those are still going strong. I think we may still have some openings for the August one. So visit our website for more info about that.
Well, tell us what the website is while you have the opportunity.
LCSO.net.
Yeah, not LCS.org because they'll take you someplace else. So
that's right.
And you talked about a Facebook presence. So you have Facebook and you're now going to really gear up Instagram also.
That's right. Yeah. So please follow us on Instagram and we'll post everything about our concerts there.
So in our final minute here, you talked about what you have coming up this coming weekend. But now what's like the first regular concert on the series?
Yeah, so the first concert in the series is, we have Hoosier Star first,
right,
September 9th. Mm-hmm. So we have many very talented finalists. We're very excited about that. And then the opening concert on November, and it is going to feature guest artist Sally Koo. She's a fabulous violinist and colleague of Carolyn Watson's at the University of Illinois. And it has kind of a Hungarian theme. The concert has a Hungarian theme. So it'll be really, really festive and fun. And then, of course, our holiday at the Pops.
Which is always popular.
December 10th. Yes. And it, I'm sure, will sell out. So get your tickets for that early.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. Emily Yannis is the new executive director for the LaPorte County Symphony. And appreciate you coming on and sharing your whole art vision for the symphony.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, have a magnificent time.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker, and for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at AOTA@breck.com. That's AOTA@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.